This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents
Payne and Pendergast,
presented by Allied Home Security.
Into the 7 o'clock hour we go. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday, a Texans Ticket Tuesday. Congrats, Corey in Houston. You are going to the Texans and the Jets on Sunday. Next ticket opportunity. Way to go, Corey. More than anything, Corey, we appreciate you listening to the show. I'm happy for your tickets and everything, but we appreciate your listenership above and beyond everything else.
Let's remember, some of these Jets fans are Yankees fans. Not as many. Most Jets fans are Mets fans, and Yankees fans are Giants fans, supposedly. But but some of these will be Yankees fans. So let's disappoint them. They're already disappointed in a lot of ways, but let's make it even worse for them.
Yeah, let's make
losing
their
to
life
the miserable. Losing to one of the worst teams is always a little bit more depressing, especially since the Jets are playing a lot of their younger players and everything, but it's not like they're trying to lose games the same way it feels like the Texans were trying to play the left middle a little bit, where they're like, all right, well, we're not trying to be the worst team in the league, but we're, you know, definitely not trying to win a boatload of games.
Jets beat the Bengals a couple weeks ago when the Bengals were the number one seed in the AFC. So
And now they suck.
Yeah. Now they suck. Ian Rapoport, a little bit of gimmick infringement on Mike Sando here, but he went to a bunch of executives who did what you and I both love, Seth, didn't put their names on it. You and I love the anonymous executives who just...
Yeah, they speak very freely and openly.
It's the best. We
and
love
it's
that.
The best because sometimes, too, you find out that some of them are kind of dumb. Like, remember, Sean, remember when there was an anonymous exec in 2017, a baseball exec, who said that one of his reservations midway through the season on the Astros was they struck out too much? And The writer said they're actually the best in the league at not striking out. And the exec said, I don't believe that.
Fake news. Okay. Well, these particular anonymous execs, these are GMs or personnel executives from around the NFL. Ian Rapoport caught up with 10 of them. And the consensus seems to be, for those of you who are watching this Texan season, and I know there are a lot of you out there because we hear from you on the text page, especially a day like yesterday when Seth and I come in and we're fired up that the Texans beat a division rival, that they sent a bunch of soaking wet hillbillies home all angry and sad that they lost to the Texans on Sunday. We were pumped up about that. And there's this smattering of you that are like, they can't even lose the right way, the Texans. They need to get the number one pick in the draft. The only way that you root for the number one pick in the draft is if there's a Trevor Lawrence type sitting there. And there isn't in this draft. But these particular 10 anonymous GMs or executives, I think, went deep on some analysis of this quarterback class. To me, Seth, this confirms that the Texans indeed should be trying to win games. It confirms to me that if you're a fan of the Texans, go ahead and root for them to win games. Because none of these guys are Trevor Lawrence to the point where these anonymous GMs and executives believe, among the lot of them, that it's the consensus seems to be that Matt Corral of Ole Miss is the only one that everybody really believes in as a first round pick, not even a top five pick or anything.
Right.
As a first round pick, with Kenny Pickett from Pitt, who's had a real rise his senior year this year, and then Malik Willis, the Auburn transfer, who's playing at Liberty. Both guys that I think a lot of these GMs and execs feel have a lot of first-round traits.
And the biggest reminder, honestly, even if it were a year where Trevor Lawrence is the quarterback, is that, look, yeah, you do increase your chances somewhat just the higher in the draft you go, obviously. But this notion that the notion that the overwhelming way that you have to get a good quarterback is to get him number one overall is just completely and totally flawed. I mean, if you last year, what was the stat I had said? One of the top 13 in QBR quarterbacks last year was even a top five pick.
Correct.
This year in the top 15 QBR ratings, I would say about half of them aren't even first round picks. Like it's yeah. And definitely two thirds of them are less than not even top 10 picks. So Pat Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, all those guys, not top 10 picks or not top five picks either. So yeah, it's not the year, nor is it really any year anymore, I don't think, where you got to just suck for a specific player. Not in this game of football. Basketball is another story. And ironically, you can't really tank for the number one overall pick in basketball.
No, because of the lottery. You're right. Yeah. So Corral, Pickett, and Willis seem to be the guys. The other names that are on the fringe are Sam Howell of North Carolina, who was thought to be one of the top two or three quarterbacks potentially coming into this year, and Carson Strong from Nevada, who my guess is not a lot of the people listening have seen because he's in the Mountain West and he plays at a late time slot every Saturday.
I'm going to say of all these guys where, you know, they're kind of, okay, they're first-round picks and you got to take a quarterback, so I guess I'll take him. They're not your dream guys. When you look at guys that, like, and I'll say like Pat Mahomes or Deshaun Watson that ultimately ended up being undervalued in the draft. I think most teams would have said, oh, especially the Bears, would have said like, oh, okay, if I'd known he was going to be that good, hell yeah, I'll take him number one overall. I'll trade whatever I can up to get him number one or number two or number three
overall.
The Bears
took Trubisky is why you're
right. Those guys, they have very clearly defined traits that you could have seen, okay, that's how Deshaun Watson is going to be a really good quarterback in the NFL, or that's how Pat Mahomes is going to be a really good quarterback in the NFL. I think Malik Willis is the only one that you can look at and say, okay, wow, that's extreme physical skill of some variety. He's doing it at Liberty. He couldn't crack third string at Auburn, but now he's doing it at a lesser level. So what exactly is he? At the very least, I know that he's freakishly physically talented. With the other guys, I think there's just a whole lot more projection. So the greedy want my dessert now fan says I'd like Malik Willis just because I feel like he's got the most upside.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's, you know, it's interesting. Spencer Rattler was the name that everybody was talking about coming into this year, and I think you and I were both of the opinion. I think more of that had to do with pedigree than it did actually what Spencer Rattler had put on film up to that point, that there was a feeling that, well, Oklahoma is just this number one overall pick factory where you run them through the car wash and they get spit out the other side of the Lincoln Riley car wash as a Heisman Trophy winner and a number one overall pick. He's not even the number one guy on his team right now. Caleb Williams is a starter.
Yeah. And I think even if like Spencer Rattler had somehow held on to it, you know, even if he played slightly better than mm-hmm. he was earlier, I don't think he'd be that guy. Everything's kind of reached a level now where I think it used to be if you were running in an extreme spread offense, there's no way you're going to get drafted in the first round because everybody thought it was just the system.
Mm-hmm.
And then it all of a sudden turned into I think people were starting to wonder, oh, if all you have to do is be the quarterback at Oklahoma, then you're going to be the number one overall pick in the draft. People understand the difference now. I think scouts have enough experience evaluating quarterbacks in various systems now that it's not as much of a factor.
If you're wondering about the crapshoot of number one overall picks, as Seth just said, the stat is that in 2020, of the 13 top-rated quarterbacks via ESPN's QBR rating, only one was even a top five pick. It was Baker Mayfield. Here's where that pick is at right now with his fan base 4 years into his career.
Baker, what did you make of some of the booing there in the second half from the fans?
Those are probably the same fans that won't be quiet while we're on offense and trying to operate. So don't really care.
So there you go. So there's one top five quarterback, and he's in a tiff right now with his fan base.
Baker's in that tough spot where he realizes, like, oh, actual like love and adoration from the fans is fickle. Yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe I shouldn't go like worrying so much, because like that was the most disingenuous I don't care I've ever heard, because if there's somebody that cares about perception, it's Baker Mayfield. Loves stirring the pot and going on Colin Coward and all that stuff. It's so he cares.
Yeah. Someone says on the text page, I'm not so sure yet that Trevor Lawrence is, quote, Trevor Lawrence either. Look, that, I mean, that, I guess that's fair. Like, he hasn't been good so far 10 games into his career. I'll tell you this right now, that if Trevor Lawrence were in this draft, even with the 10 games worth where the texter is saying, and I don't mean to pick on the texter. I think it's a valid point. Like, hey, look, everybody's talking about Trevor Lawrence as his generational talent. He hasn't really shown it other than flashes of it at all yet this year. Even the big game that they won against Buffalo is 9-6. So it's not like Trevor Lawrence lit up the sky with touchdown passes. I would say even if with this body of work, small body of work so far, if you toss Trevor Lawrence in this draft, he's going number. I would if Trevor Lawrence got thrown back into this draft pool this year, Seth, if Jacksonville said, we hate Trevor Lawrence and we're going to change the rules and we can throw him back in the draft, I would say, you know what, now I'm going to root for the Texans to lose the rest of their games. I would take Trevor Lawrence with the number one overall pick again. Absolutely.
This is a stat that I'm going to give without any context at all. Trevor Lawrence now has one more big-time throw than he does turnover-worthy plays on the season. That's a Pro Football Focus stat. I have no idea if that's good or not. I'm going to tell you right now.
Thank you.
I don't have a damn clue.
Okay.
Is that a lot? Is that a little? I don't know. I don't know.
I got one of those nervous sports talk radio feelings where I'm like, I don't know how I'm supposed to react to this.
I think you're supposed to have a much healthier ratio of like multiple big time throws per turnover worthy play. What they try to do there is they try to grade plays where, because sometimes an interception's not a quarterback's fault, but then sometimes he gets away with something that should have been an interception.
Sure.
So they just grade it as a turnover worthy play. It's a good concept.
Yeah. We're also getting texts from earlier when Seth and I pointed out that Carlos Correa had an MLB ball cap on in some Instagram pictures, turned around backwards, so we couldn't see what the logo was. So there were a lot of Astro fans and probably fans of other teams on the comments section going, hey, what logo's on the lid? Whose hat you got on, bro? Seth joked that maybe he had like a, you know, a dirty saying or something on the
like
front.
Like a wine him, dine him type of thing.
Yeah.
That hat. It might have been the hat that Seabass was wearing in Dumb and Dumber.
Right, right. So someone said maybe it said FBI. Female body inspector.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. It might have been one of those Big Johnson T-shirt logos,
right?
You know, from the 80s. Too.
Right, right. Yeah. Our friend Jackie Goss had a good one. He said maybe it says "Pay me, click."
Yeah,
that's good.
That would be masterful. You know why, Sean?
Yeah.
That would be an homage to Houston sports history.
Yes,
and that would be digging deep. There's no way somebody like Correa would have knowledge of Dante
Robinson.
Robinson, thank you. Jeez,
he's just your teammate. That's all.
Yeah, I know. I spent an hour and a half talking to him at the Houston Sports Awards this last just several months ago.
Did you call him by the right name?
I did. Yeah, okay, I was excited to see Dante. I hadn't seen him in a long time. Yeah. He told the story, by the way. I think he told this on Texans radio once too about that. Which I believe the story was, so when he put "Pay Me, Rick" on his shoes when he was in a contract dispute with the Texans in a year, and he actually wore them into a game, he says that those were just the shoes that he'd been working out in, and he kind of done it like his motivation while he was working out during the season. But then when he showed up in season, he wasn't thinking about it anymore.
He forgot.
And he genuinely like didn't have a thought about it. It was kind of a surprise to him when they came to him and said that it was kind of a big deal after the game.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is great. All right, 713-572-4610. If you want to hit us, a lot of you hitting us on the text page. Boy, people have thoughts on quarterbacks, man. So we'll circle back to that. Texans tickets, we're giving them away, about 30 minutes from now is when the next window opens, 7:45, to listen for that cue to call to win Texans Jets tickets for this Sunday afternoon. Is David Culley handling adversity better than the happiest coach on earth, Pete Carroll? We'll do a compare contrast next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the Free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. Ross Tucker jumps in with us at the bottom of the hour, our Odyssey NFL insider on a Texans Ticket Tuesday. We're giving away Texans Jets tickets each hour. Listen, be listening between 7:45 and 8 o'clock this hour. Is David Culley handling adversity better than what I think most people think is the happiest coach on earth? He's the Disney World of coaches. He's Pete Carroll. It's not
Pete
going
Carroll,
well.
Mr. Positive all the time.
Right.
Always
right.
Moving forward, all that stuff.
Always, yeah. Always. So before we get to Pete Carroll, because Seth listened in on Pete Carroll's press conference yesterday, the Seattle Seahawks are 3-7 right now, so they're only one game ahead of the Texans, and they play each other in 3 weeks.
Yeah. As noted on the broadcast, the Seahawks went into last week's game having the fewest number of 10-play offensive drives. The Texans were second. That's the reason they were citing that stat on the Texans broadcast.
Should be a barn burner.
Texans had the second fewest number of 10-play drives. Yeah. But the Seahawks, it's not been going well for the Seahawks so far this year.
No, they've got Washington and San Francisco between now and them. My guess is they're underdogs in both of those games. So before we get to Pete Carroll, let's just a reminder. This is David Culley the day after the loss to Miami. Team falls to 1-8. They've lost 8 in a row. Here is David Culley handling adversity.
Their head coach's spirit is high. So when they see me and I walk in there, they're, every day they're going to see that. And our coaching staff is the same way. That's a really good dressing room that I got in there with those players. I haven't seen anybody with their head down. They know we don't do that here. They know that everything is going to be positive. We just got to make the corrections. They trust what we're doing. We just got to do it better.
So that's not bad. That's pretty good handling of adversity there. Almost to the point where I think there's a lot of Texan fans like, will you get angry at losses, please? Please will you get angry at losses. Now, Pete Carroll has not had to handle this type of thing in a long, long time. They have been, by and large, very successful since he arrived in Seattle, and certainly since Russell Wilson got there. They win double-digit games. You can pencil them in every year, Seth, for 10 wins at least. Every year.
Yeah.
So he hasn't had to do this.
So after the game on Sunday, he goes in, and I didn't realize this. It makes sense. I guess coaches have to spend a certain number of minutes. I don't know if that's a new rule, because it seems like we used to have some pretty short coaches storming out press conferences. But there's a certain number of minutes that the coaches have to stay in there for. So Carroll's going along all right, answering some questions. Doesn't look happy. Just kind of looks morose more than anything. He's not angry. Gives what I thought was like a pretty much a normal answer, and then at the tail end, all of a sudden, this happens.
When they got 40 minutes, we got 20 minutes, you know, and it really comes down to them being able to convert and us not. And so I'm sorry, it's not a different story. Been the same story in and out of this whole season, and we've got to see if we can turn this thing. I'm really done.
So he walks out. I'm really done.
No. And he didn't look like angry, upset, or anything. He's just like, I'm gonna go now. A scene from it's like a comedic scene from a movie where somebody just bows out all of a sudden out of nowhere. I'm gonna go now. That's what he did. And the only reason I knew this, Sean, was because I was kind of checking in on the press conference, and I was zooming along like from one spot to the next. And the only thing I noticed was I clicked. And all of a sudden, he was wearing a different jacket.
Yeah.
In the same press conference.
Like Reba McEntire. He's changing costumes at his press conference.
So he leaves wearing one jacket.
Yeah.
And then it just cuts to immediately you hear a little bit of laughter and him walking in wearing a different jacket.
Yeah.
So I know that you probably have some more questions. I don't know if I have any more answers for you, but I'll try my ass. I'll try.
Okay.
I'll try.
Okay. So that was weird. And then Pete Carroll, when he comes back, he goes on this long diatribe about what it's like, how unfamiliar it is for him to be coaching a losing team.
You know, I was thinking, since I walked out of here, I had a couple extra minutes that I normally don't have. I go all the way back to the Jets, you know,
I'm on one season at the Jets. This is the last time we were in a situation like this as a head coach. You know, we were never this far behind it in New England, and we had, I think we lost five games in a row at one time at the Jets at the end of the season, and I can't remember anything about what happened, any of those press conferences or the meetings. I'm just not any good at this. You know, I'm not prepared for this. This is not this. I'm struggling to do a good job of, you know, coaching when you're getting your butt kicked in week in and week out. It's new territory.
Yeah, I'll throw USC in there. Obviously, he's one of the most successful college coaches of all time. Like it has been a long time, Seth, since he's coached a really bad football team.
Sean, you go back to the Jets season was 1994. Is he just saying all that? I was kind of like, all right, Pete, simmer down a little bit. Like, yeah, it's a no. It's been that long. In 1994, they were 6-10. They didn't make the playoffs. But then in New England, the worst he was 8-8. They went to the playoffs 2 out of 3 times. Then he goes to USC, and then Seattle. He was 7-9 the first couple seasons as they were building.
And they won a playoff game in one of those 7-9 years. Remember the Beast
Quake? That's
right.
They went to the first year. They went to the playoffs as a 7-9 team. It was pathetic.
Right.
But yeah, and then since then, they've had nothing but winning seasons. It's kind of freakish how good he's been. And I told you before, it is. That's why I don't know. I worry sometimes that you throw the baby out with the bathwater if you try to get rid of quote unquote bad culture guys when a team is doing poorly. Because frankly, I think there are a lot of really good coaches and players who are probably bad teammates on losing teams because they're just so miserable and they're just not accustomed to dealing with it. And so sometimes it's harder to judge who guys are. And that's one of the reasons I think that tanking is a dangerous notion. Like abject tanking in football is a dangerous notion because I think there is some element of truth to a lot of this. And it's hard to see the best in people when you're just getting your teeth kicked in, but he's been good all along. It's just it's really hard to coach when you're this bad.
I think that to me the most interesting character in that whole thing is Russell Wilson, because we know he wanted out before the season. You know,
yeah.
even though he said all the right things, he basically said, no, I want to be a Seahawk, but if they traded me, these are the four teams that I would go to. They're going to go through that whole rigmarole again, and maybe in a much more serious fashion this offseason. I think it's going to be Aaron Rodgers. I think it's going to be Deshaun Watson. And I think Russell Wilson's going to be out there available for teams as well, especially given the lack of solutions in this draft that you and I just talked about in the previous segment.
Do you think the Texans would want Russell Wilson?
Oh, boy. Yeesh. Yes. I don't know that Russell Wilson.
Oh, no, I know. Especially leaving Seattle.
Yeah.
I think Jack Easterby and David Culley could sell Russell Wilson. Like, on whatever. Man, Russell's got a. He loves that cheesy, schmaltzy nonsense stuff that Jack Easterby can preach.
Yeah.
He would be all over that.
Yeah. The only thing that made me pause, look, obviously in terms of just his demeanor and kind of like that all lines up with what we think this culture feels like. The only thing that made me pause, you know, he's married to a celebrity. He has that celebrity vibe about them as a couple.
He already put that weird list out when he claimed he wasn't asking for a trade, but he gave like the teams that he would approve. And
yeah.
Houston was not one of them.
No, it was not. Yeah. They were all playoff teams that he put out there. So he's a little glitchy, but overall, like if you're asking me pick one, yes or no, I'd pick yes.
The only question I had was, okay, with the Texans who just had a quarterback force his way off his team, would they be inclined to want another guy that's forcing his way off his team? Like, do we want to bring that into the fold?
Here's my first question. Does he have a no-trade clause?
Yeah, exactly.
That's the first question.
You know what, Sean? This Deshaun situation is probably going to change the way no trade clauses are written
100%.
In sports contracts.
Yes.
I think a lot of teams now are going to say, yeah, we'll give you the no trade clause, but if you ask for the trade, the clause evaporates.
Absolutely.
If you ask for a trade, we're going to trade you wherever we damn well please.
Absolutely. No, Deshaun has found the glitch in the matrix. He has weaponized a no trade clause 100%. 100%. All right, Ross Tucker as our Odyssey NFL insider. We'll get his thoughts on the Texans' win over the Titans this weekend. Are the Titans the AFC team of those teams in that mosh pit that are in the playoffs right now, are they going to crash the hardest? I think there's some evidence that, well, not the least of which is this past Sunday, that they might. Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider, is next. Texans tickets about 20 minutes from now. Stay there.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Welcome back in, Payne and Pendergast, on a Tuesday. Texans tickets coming up before the top of the hour, so be listening between 7:45 and 8 o'clock, probably sometime during headlines. Right now, joined on the hotline by our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. Insider calls presented by BetQL. Get access to data and insights the sportsbooks don't want you to see. Bet smarter, beat the books, download the BetQL app, or visit BetQL.com. Today, Ross Tucker joining us right now on the program. And Ross, you're our NFL insider, but for the purposes of this week, you are a University of Houston Cougar insider because you are going to be calling the Cougs and the UConn Huskies this week.
Yeah, I actually have a triple header this week, three games in 4 days. So I'll be down in your great state doing the Raiders and the Cowboys on Thanksgiving.
Wow.
Fly up to Hartford, and I've got the Cougs, who are really good, man. It's been fun watching them a little bit this week so far. And then Sunday night, I got the Ravens and the Browns. So big busy week for me, Thanksgiving week.
Wow, that's a really busy week. We played your call from the Miami Dolphins fake offensive lineman touchdown
yes.
last week.
Yes.
We had a good time with that.
I still need to talk to that guy. Like, I need to know what was going through his head when he turned around and looked for the ball like it was designed for him. Like,
yeah,
that's the part. Everybody's talking about the athleticism and everything. Like, he turned and looked back for the ball like, I'm open, give it to me. Like, this is my shot. And then he knows fully well that it's illegal for him to catch the ball or touch it. But he still went for the gusto anyway. I mean, he still dives, sprawls out for the goal line. Like, what is going through it? Like, it's illegal. Why are you trying to dive for the end zone? I'm convinced. Some of you guys, maybe he just wanted like a viral Instagram moment or a TikTok that he could have for the rest of his life. I have no idea what he was thinking, but it was amazing and hilarious.
You know what, though, Ross? You know how that sometimes happens, like in any sport. In the moment you do something that you never think you would do, it just something takes over you automatically. You know, and sometimes it ends up being something, you know, like maybe you punch somebody or you do something like that that you just completely lose it. Like Tom Brady last night. Tom Brady goes to slide, and I don't know if anybody made a big deal of this or not. It was obvious to me he tried to kick the defender as he slid. Everybody's bragging about him, like, juking somebody and sliding. He tried to kick somebody the same way he kicked Ed Reed in the junk, 10 years ago when he was scrambling. And I don't think it's anything he plans on doing. It's just Tom Brady in that moment is kind of a dirty SOB.
Yeah, I don't think he was trying to kick him. I think
carrying his water.
No, I think it's a protective mechanism. I mean, you could still say it's dirty either way, but I think he's putting his cleats up like that almost like a shield. You know what I mean? Almost as a protect. I don't think he's actually trying to kick somebody, because if he is, it's a weird kick. I think he's just trying to, have that in front of him. It's funny you say that, Seth. Junior high school, a guy tipped the ball out of my hand. Yeah. And I had to get to the backcourt to get it, and he got right up in my, right all over me. I swung my elbow so hard, I knocked the kid out, out. It was really bad.
Oh, gosh.
You know, it was really bad, and I had to, I saw him there on the ground, and I just, put the ball down and went over and sat on the bench because I knew I was gone. I swear to you, I did not think about it. It was a natural reaction. I got the ball. He was up in my – and I just swung my elbow. I did not consciously think about it, I promise.
Wow. Ross Tucker knocking –
I'm going to write a letter to that kid's mom.
Knocking fools out.
Tell you.
Bryant Nickisher, Antietam High School. Bryant Nickisher. It cost me a lot of all-county
votes. What's his name? What's his name again, Ross?
Was it a big deal?
No, I think he was – I don't think he was out that long. But, coach was – the crazy thing is, they only gave me a foul for it. Like, I didn't get a T or anything. They just gave me a foul, but my coach took me out anyway because he's like, you can't do that, dude. But the other team's coach was going berserk and wanted me ejected. All of our student section was saying, tee him up, tee him. Like, they were trying to get the other team's coach a technical.
Oh, man.
He was losing his mind.
You were just sitting there embarrassed on the – did you feel like you just wanted to run out of there and get the hell away from everything at that point?
No, because actually I hated that little kid, so I was kind of glad I did it. You know what's funny, though? Hey, I got one more tangent of the story, okay? This guy – so I'm from Reading, Pennsylvania, an hour west of Philly. The one ref for the game – I was like 210 in this game, but junior in high school, right? 6'4", 210. The one ref – was also like a bartender. So I see him that summer at like a family party. He's bartending. And he's like, hey, Ross. I'm like, yeah. He's like, man, now, because now I'm like 240, 245. Like, I gained 30 pounds getting ready for my seat. He's like, man, if you elbow a kid like you did in that game last year, this year you'll probably kill him. And I was like, haha, yeah. And I'm like, wait a minute. This is a ref. This is a guy that refs the game saying if you do that again, you'll probably kill a kid. Like,
that's Philly.
I mean, maybe problem one is having refs that bartend at your parents' house. I mean, what?
That's great. I'm just picturing the coach of this other team trying to chase you around like Isaiah Stewart and LeBron James this past week. And like the coach breaking free from like four people holding him back to get at Ross Tucker.
That was incredible. Like, that was Isaiah Stewart being like, no, it's good. I'm fine.
Ah! He's breaking tackles.
No, dude, he's so lucky. Awesome. He's so lucky he didn't make it to LeBron, because you could tell after that burst he was so gassed.
Yeah.
Because you know that you're just all pure adrenaline and everything, and your body just you're just gassed after that. And LeBron, who I'm guessing I don't know if LeBron's ever been in a fight in his life. He's been the chosen one since he was 13 years old. But yeah, I feel like he could have just pushed him over with a feather at that point.
That was I think there are people in life that don't like seeing conflict, don't like seeing physical alter. I love it. I live for it. Like, I love that. Isaiah Stewart's my favorite end player in the NBA now. Like, that was, and if he had gotten to LeBron, I think it's okay for us, some of us, to admit as humans that we like that.
Yeah.
Like, that's the part I miss the most about football. I miss the violence.
Do you?
Like, oh, well, yeah. I miss the locker room. I don't miss the locker room. I got plenty of friends. I don't miss the locker room. I miss running into another dude as hard as I possibly can and knocking them over and knowing that I just hurt them. Like, that's what I like.
That's where, you know what, that's what it angers me sometimes, Ross, when guys try to, you know, they try to sound politically correct and they say, like, of course, nobody's trying to hurt anybody. I'm like, what? Like, what part of running into somebody as hard as you possibly can has anything to do with, like, but I hope they land gently. Right. God forbid they get hurt. You don't want to really injure somebody, you know.
you don't want to injure that
punk bastard you were playing basketball against.
Yeah, you don't ever want to injure them, but you want to hurt them every play. You want to hit them. Like, why do you lift weights? Why do you hit them as hard as you can? And by the way, they want to do the same to you. Yeah. So you better get them before they get you. Yeah. Trust me. I've said this to you guys before. Sean, did you ever play football?
Like Pop Warner, but never in high school or college.
Okay, but you did it. But you did it.
Yeah.
Because I have buddies, right, that like I almost feel like there's no feeling better than running into another human being as hard as you can and knocking them over. And I feel like I always say to my buddies, I've thought long and hard about how to start a business where like we can find people and like you can pay like $500 and I'll get some guys, you know, I don't know where I get them, but I'll get some, they'll just run down a field like with a helmet, shoulder pads, and you're able to just take a running at him and just obliterate him. Now, there's insurance issues. There's a lot of workman's comp stuff I need to work through, but I'm telling you, it would be a gold mine. Anybody that's ever played football, like, dude, you just get to lay out this dude as hard as you can. It's amazing.
Dude, I'm just they're having a hard time getting people to take jobs for $20 an hour at fast food restaurants right now. Like, so I wonder how much you're going to have to pay for that. But it's true.
Well, it would be like the guys from Texas that come up to Pennsylvania and pay like 15, 20 grand to get a whitetail buck. Yeah, it happens all the time. Like where my wife's from, like Texas guys come up and they pay $25,000 for, like, I got 20 of them in my yard right now, but that's what they do. So what I'm saying is it would have to be really high end, like Wall Street guys. Like it would be we'd run out somewhere in New York City or something. And they'd be like, they drop $1,000. I pay the guy that gets destroyed $200 per blow up. I mean, there's people that blown up by a bunch of Wall Street guys $2,000 a day.
Hell yes.
It is almost – it's that feeling of like hitting the sweet spot on a golf swing, except 400 times better. Like when you hit somebody just right and they either just slam the ground or you crumple. They crumple beneath you. It's a really, really cool feeling. I think you're onto something there, Ross.
I'm just picturing Ross.
And it's not even that terrible for the guy that gets hit.
Like, the bigger, cleaner hits sometimes aren't that bad for those guys.
Correct. A clean, pure hit. I remember a couple times, like, I got laid out and I laughed. You know, I mean, I was mad, but I laughed because it was just hilarious.
I just know Ross is going to start this business, and if the cost basis is messed up, we're going to see homeless people out there getting tackled by Wall Street stockbrokers and things like that.
I wasn't going to say homeless people, but that was the original business plan.
Hey, people pay to go throw axes at targets now. I don't think it's the craziest idea in the world, Ross. I think you got something there. Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider. So let's get to some actual NFL talk before we cut you loose, Ross. Texans beat the Titans this past weekend. The biggest upset of the weekend, easily. The AFC is kind of a mess right now. Are the Titans the AFC team that's sort of in that playoff mess right now that's going to crash the hardest out of all of them?
So I think both conferences are a mess right now. Yeah. I don't think there are any great teams. I think there's a bunch of good teams, which means the teams that are playing their best at the end will be the teams that actually do something. And you know, you look right now, Patriots have won 5 in a row. Chiefs have won 4 in a row. Colts have won 3 in a row. I mean, those are the teams. You start to win 3. Seth knows this. You have to win 3, 4, 5 games in a row in the NFL. You think you're like the 85 Bears. Like, you just, like, the feeling in the locker room and the organization is like, we are awesome. We're unbelievable. And that can carry you a long way. It really can. So I think those are the teams that are interesting. You know, speaking of interesting, by the way, on the Even Money Betting podcast, I loved the Texans getting the points last week. I said I thought they had a chance to win. My question is this. Have you guys gotten any pushback on that win? Because it doesn't really – like, what does it really do for the Texans long term?
Yes, we have. From texters.
This is where I am with this, Ross. For one, there's no clearly identified awesome quarterback prospect in this
draft.
It's a crapshoot of a draft. And even when there is an identified number one, it's still not the easiest thing to get the number one overall pick, and that guy can still bust. So I think, personally, I'd rather start seeing them kind of build some semblance of a culture just by being competitive in games while also having a top five pick. I think they're going to have a top five pick. So I'm not particularly worried about it. Some people are obsessed with that part of it. I've just seen, like, look at the Browns right now. I don't know, man. Everything can look good on paper in football. But, Ross, you've seen this. For some franchises, when they go through these stretches where it almost doesn't matter who the coach is or who the GM is, there's just a disease on that franchise. I don't like to tempt fate in becoming one of those franchises that just becomes a trash franchise. So I'm okay with having the fourth overall pick or the third overall pick.
Yeah, plus a couple things I would piggyback on there. You know, you guys are going to be able to get a bunch of picks for Deshaun Watson at some point.
We hope.
And they might not be the number one pick, but they can be high. And also, you know, if you think about some of the recent number one picks, like Jared Goff, Baker Mayfield.
Right.
All right. I mean, these are guys, and by the way, these are guys that went number one overall when there were other good quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. But these teams still thought, I mean, they thought that Baker Mayfield was better than Josh Allen. And
Lamar Jackson. You know what I mean? Like, they thought Jared Goff, he's not even better than Carson Wentz. You know, so I you have to be careful with that.
Yeah, Mitch Trubisky could end up your top pick at quarterback, you know, right. And then, hey, it'll be nothing but glory for the next decade, right?
Right. Or he's Josh Allen's backup now in Buffalo. That, yeah. Either one or the other. Ross Tucker is our Odyssey NFL Insider. Insider calls presented by BetQL. BetQL is here to help us all make better bets through real proven analytics. Bet smarter, beat the books, download the BetQL app, or visit the BetQL.com. Visit the website, BetQL.com. Today, Ross, happy Thanksgiving, safe travels, and I think I speak for all the Cougs here in town. We look forward to hearing your call on the Cougs game on Friday. Go get them.
Yeah, I can't wait. Saturday at noon. Saturday at noon, they play UConn. CBS Sports Network should be awesome. And nobody take my business idea. It's between us.
Yeah, nobody's listening. It's all good, Ross. You're fine. Ross, we appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving. Yes, Ross Tucker joining us here. All right, we're inside the window right now to give away tickets to the Texans and the Jets on Sunday. So be listening next few minutes here as we do headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
All right, let's start off with the Texans here. David Culley had a lot of things to say yesterday. We'll get to more of them as the show rolls on here. From a practicality standpoint, from a news standpoint, I think people wanted updates on injuries. All of a sudden, the Texans have a mini cluster of injuries at the defensive end position. Of course, they moved on from Charles Omenihue. They cut Whitney Mercilus, so they were already kind of self-inflicting some depth issues on the defensive end depth chart. Jonathan Grenard missed the trip to Tennessee with a foot injury. Here was David Culley's update yesterday on Jonathan Grenard's availability.
We'll know more about it on Wednesday. We anticipate him being limited, but we'll kind of see where he is right now.
All right, so a quick update on Jonathan Grenard. So tomorrow's a big day. We'll get that injury report and we'll see. But I think he previewed it there. He's going to be limited. He's not going to be a full participant in practice this week. We'll see if he plays on Sunday against the Jets. So Jordan Jenkins had a lot of snaps available to him, presumably on Sunday against Tennessee. Problem was, he got injured early in the game. His injury seems more serious than Jonathan Grenard's.
We're not really sure yet how serious Jordan's injury is. I know he will probably be out for at least a couple of weeks. We're not for sure yet if he's going to have surgery, but it could be a couple of weeks with him. But no, we brought up Derek Rivers this past week. We've played seven or eight guys. Sometimes we've had seven up and not eight, and we still have those seven guys regardless of whether Jonathan or Jordan is ready to go. We'll just go with the guys that we got.
Yeah, there were a big bump up in snap counts for guys like Jacob Martin on Sunday. So.
Yeah, and this is something that Lovie Smith tends to do with his defenses. He likes to rotate his defensive linemen through because the fresher, a lot of times a guy with fresh legs is better than an all-pro with dead legs. So no matter what the composition of the team is, even if hopefully the Texans end up getting a few studs in here, those guys a lot of times will still only get 70% of the snaps. Right now everybody's getting about 50% of the snaps. The one thing that showed up, the guys that showed up last week with the injuries and with the vacancies, Derek Rivers we saw make a nice play in the fourth quarter. DeMarcus Walker, who is very versatile, he can play end or tackle. He had a pretty active day. He had three pressures. He had a tackle at some point. I know that DeMarcus Walker is having a productive game based on how many times I forget that Bernardrick McKinney's not actually on the field.
Yeah.
He wears number 55.
That's right.
Every time I see DeMarcus Walker, I think like, oh, Bernardrick, good job. And then I realize, oh, okay, no, that's actually DeMarcus Walker. And so I don't know. I think for whatever progress the Texans have shown over the last couple weeks, I think you can withstand an injury or two here or there because they keep a really strong rotation. It does. That is one thing that I believe hurts you in run defense because it's harder for guys to really get the feel of the run fits and everything if you're in there on a defense that's already shooting gaps and running upfield where you're already prone to the run a little bit. I do think it weakens you there. The way you have to make up for that is with the sacks and turnovers, which the turnover side the Texans have taken care of.
Yep, so the Texans off today, back at practice tomorrow. Jets coming to town, and again, stay tuned. Within the next few minutes here, you'll get a chance to win tickets to see the Texans and the Jets on Sunday. Seth, the USFL is back, baby. And I know we had announced this, I think last week was when the news broke that Fox, a few months ago, bought the rights to all the USFL intellectual property. And they announced last week that they're going to reprise the league. They're going to televise the games on Fox. It's going to be a 10-team league. This is an interesting structure. They are reprising 10 of the USFL teams that were still around when the league went defunct back in the late 80s when they tried to compete head-to-head with the NFL. I don't think this USFL is dumb enough to do that. Owned by Fox. The Houston Gamblers will be one of the 10 teams that will play in this league. Here's the catch. For the first year, at least, all the games will be played in one central location in Birmingham, Alabama.
Oh, Birmingham?
Yeah.
The hell?
Yeah.
Birmingham?
Got any good?
Why the
got
hell
any good,
is it?
Got any good Alabama jokes, Seth?
What the hell? Like, no, I'm dumbfounded that it would be in Birmingham. I would say at least if you're gonna have it in one location, I would say you should take it to a big city where you can figure out a way to get 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people into some small venue to where you can have some kind of atmosphere or something. I guess this is what I'm going to be intrigued by, Sean. If one thing the pandemic did was it taught networks how to create a more energetic experience than there was in reality, and that maybe with a lot of the augmented reality and everything, they're going to figure out a way to make this something that on television looks way more like in a more exciting environment than it is.
I would counterpoint to your point of putting it in a bigger market or a bigger place. You brought up Dallas. I would say that there's a better chance that in a city like Birmingham, which is a college, it's in the college footprint more than the NFL, that there's probably a void for spring football. These are probably going to be a lot of young players that a lot of these college fans are very familiar with. And I think optically, to use your point about TV, which I think is a great point, that it's going to be largely a TV product owned by a TV company, I think a smaller venue with 15,000 to 20,000 rabid college-type fans is going to play better on TV than a cavernous NFL stadium.
Right. No, but part of my point was to play it in a smaller venue.
Oh, okay.
Because you're having all the teams play here. It's one thing if you're in a small town and, like, everybody gets behind that team, like whichever Birmingham team it is or Alabama team it is or whatever. But then you've got how many other teams? Like 7 other teams that these guys won't necessarily care about. I guess, I don't know, whatever. It's
spring football.
I don't know why I'm trying to dial up the perfect league here. I do think that between the different ways to monetize sports now, it's grown so much more than in the previous USFL. I think leagues have learned, you know, because of the USFL, they've learned that we're not going to try to compete with the NFL. That's not the way to make our money. And three, because the networks themselves can have control over this, and they know exactly where to put where a niche audience can make money both on television and online. There's just compared to the last time with the USFL where barely anybody had cable television, now everybody's got 300 channels.
They're going to have no travel costs, which means they don't have to
good call.
Which means they don't have to transport players and coaches every week to different venues around the country. They're going to have one rent cost. They are going to have one production crew cost. Seth, they just took all
good point.
They took all their variable expenses and they cut them down by 90%.
And they'll figure out a way to make it look like it's a raucous environment.
Yes.
I think Fox, if I recall the pandemic properly, or at least, you know, the very heights of the pandemic, I think it was Fox that did the best job of making it look like there were actually fans in the stands.
Right.
And they got the noise. Like, for some of their national games on baseball especially, they actually did a pretty good job of recreating an energetic environment. So I think that might work out. And then the other cool thing, too, is Jim Kelly gets to move out of Buffalo. He's probably going to be like, oh, hell yeah, good. I'm going back to Houston.
Gambler legend.
I can be a celebrity for my old team in warm weather instead of up there in miserable Buffalo.
Gambler legend, absolutely.
It's a Texans Ticket Tuesday. Win a pair of tickets to Texans Jets. Call now. 713-572-4610. Caller number 5 wins a pair of tickets to Texans Jets. That's 713-572-4610. Exclusively on a Texans Ticket Tuesday.
All right, there you go. Your next opportunity to win will be between 8:45 and 9 a.m. Your chance to head to Sunday's game. Texans a 3-point favorite right now, last I checked, over the New York Jets.
How's that taste, Jets fans?
Yeah, take it. So the USFL is back, which means we get the Houston Gamblers again. MLB's Hall of Fame ballot was put out yesterday, Seth, and boy, There are a lot of steroids on this ballot right now. A lot of steroids.
Is this the year where all of a sudden everything flips, you think?
It's a big year. It's a big year for Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. And I know Roger has denied use of steroids, never failed a test and things like that. But we know we can't ignore the elephant in the room as to why he's still only getting 61% of the vote 9 seasons into his candidacy
and
on there.
You need 75%.
That's right. So there are three candidates that are in their last year of candidacy on the Hall of Fame ballot. And all of them are newsworthy. Curt Schilling is at 70% right now. History would say that someone at 70% who creeps up to this level gets past the finish line, but we know that Curt Schilling's become kind of a polarizing figure the last few years for a lot of these writers with his political views. So we'll see what happens with that. Now, text page, don't come at me. I'm not taking one side or the other. I'm just pointing out the facts that Schilling is a polarizing guy. And then Clemens and Bonds. Those are the big two. This is the last year they're going to be on the ballot. Roger is they both kind of topped out lately, Seth. They had a little momentum there for a while, but Roger Clemens is at 61%. Barry Bonds right behind him at 60.7%. So this is their last chance, unless they get in with the Veterans Committee many, many years from now. This is their last chance to get voted in by the writers here.
The thing about both Clemens and Bonds is that they 100% would have been Hall of Famers before they ever touched any. As far as we know, you know, by the timeline that we know, they 100% would have been Hall of Famers.
Yep.
If they hadn't done steroids. And I feel like if you know that, it only seems justified to put them in. I don't know, especially because baseball has such a long history of various guys using various substances, both in and on their bodies, that to somehow morally punish a guy for a moral infraction. So it seems kind of arbitrary. Is for a couple of guys that definitely would have every voter for the Hall of Fame. Like, you don't even have to get that technical about this. Every voter for the Hall of Fame knows for damn sure that those two guys would have been in the Hall of Fame before it looks like they would have used anything performance enhancing.
Yes.
That's what about it that bothers me about me. It's become a little bit too much on the morality side of it. And I would say the same thing for Schilling. Look, Schilling, like, and honestly, I think honestly, whether you're conservative, liberal, what have you, like, Schilling's done some sketchy things since he's done playing baseball, but he's 18th all time in WAR amongst pitchers.
Yeah.
You know, like, he's a Hall of Fame pitcher.
And
I don't know, like, and most of the stuff that gets people all worked up, as far as I'm aware of, like, mostly, aside from him kind of being an annoying jerk while he was a player, but a lot of the more political stuff is all after he was done playing baseball.
Yeah.
So likewise, I didn't like him when he was a baseball player. He annoyed me, but I feel like you can't have a guy that was that dominant of a pitcher not be in the Hall of Fame,
especially in the postseason. We know that the stakes rise in the postseason, and Curt Schilling he's had some iconic moments in the postseason. Even if you think that the blood on the sock in the ALCS was ketchup, he still pitched really well in that ALCS. You're listening to KLT and KLT HD2 and Odyssey Station. So, Seth, you mentioned it: Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, both Hall of Fame level players. Bonds was winning MVPs when his head was still small. Both Hall of Fame level players before any alleged steroid use. So the first timers on this ballot include Alex Rodriguez, who has been pinched multiple times for steroids. Where do we come out on the Alex Rodriguez was a Hall of Fame level talent before he may or may not have started? Well, not may or may not. He did. He got suspended for a full season at one point for steroid use. Where do you come out on A-Rod in this whole thing?
I'd be at the same part there, too, especially because he was, in my very arbitrary way of thinking about this, is always just like, okay, if a guy was using it near the end of his career to try to hold on or try to enhance, or after he'd already established it, it's a blip on his PR record forever, but I don't think it should keep him out of the Hall of Fame. The other thing about the Hall of Fame, Sean, is and maybe this is the part of me that is sympathetic to him. Of all Hall of Fames, it seems like the Baseball Hall of Fame is the most lucrative financially, like, to be in. Like, these guys, baseball players, because history is such a big part of it, it seems like these guys can go to a card show a weekend and get an appearance fee to sit there and sign baseball cards in a way that I don't think it's quite to the same level with football or basketball or hockey.
I'll tell you this, Seth. That's a great point. So much so that this is how prestigious or noteworthy, I guess, the Baseball Hall of Fame is that it is lucrative to not be in it. Pete Rose makes a living not being in the Hall of Fame. The Hall of Fame ceremonies each year, Pete Rose goes to Cooperstown and signs things up in Cooperstown because he's been banned from baseball and he's not allowed in the Hall of Fame. There's enough noteworthiness with Pete, or notoriousness, I guess is a better word, with Pete Rose that he's able to make a living off of not being in the Hall of Fame.
You know what Pete Rose needs to do? This is my idea that I'm giving him for free, is to have some kind of like an anti-hero Hall of Fame. And they could get a motorcycle company to sponsor them. They could be the Renegades, kind of the rebels. So it'd be Pete Rose and Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. I think you could sell some choppers with that image, you know. And
yeah.
they could get one of these extreme coffee companies, you know, like Death Wish Coffee or one of those. They would be juggernauts and being the anti-heroes of sports.
Would definitely sell some merch for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the ballot here.
It'd be kind of like the Raiders, you know?
Yeah.
They'd have that image.
Yeah. Big Poppy. Is Big Poppy a Hall of Famer for you, Seth?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he is for me, too. I don't have the stats in front of me or whatever, but, you know, dude, he was as good a postseason performer as you're going to find. All right, so there you go.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.